Blog Talk Radio.
QT with you like usual on a Sunday. Really fast. If you're looking for some wrestling today, KDW running like usual at the arena in Jeffersonville, Indiana. You also have NWA Blue Collar Wrestling happening up here in Portland, Oregon. Last show before the NWA World Heavyweight Champion comes to town next week. Should be huge there in Portland. And speaking of Portland, Oregon, and NWA Blue Collar, we have with us a man who was there last week, semi-regular to there, as he is to a multitude of companies all over the western third of the country. Matthew Starkey, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
It's been a little while since you were on the show last, but you've been very busy. You compete in a lot of areas, like I was telling the listeners. To get the listeners a little bit of a update on that situation, can you tell us currently where all you are wrestling on a somewhat regular basis?
You know, regular basis, I would say Northwest Pro up in the Vaughn, Washington area. Definitely BCW in Portland, Oregon. AOW down in Southern California. Occasionally I'll be over in War Wrestling over in Salt Lake City. And I've made some connects with the NWA. So NWA territories, I've been in Florida. I've been in Georgia. I've been in Texas and Indiana as far as NWA goes. But as far as a regular it's a kind of a hit and miss thing. Like they'll pick me up here and there, but depends on when their shows are running and whether it fits my schedule or not. You know, I try to honor my bookings on a first come first serve basis.
That is always my philosophy too. Now, you mentioned Indiana and their NWA affiliate. I believe that would be Eric Draven's group down there in Madison, Indiana. What's it like going that far east to wrestle on a somewhat regular basis?
Eric Draven, I think that's NWA Supreme. That was a fun show. I was nervous because I hadn't really worked, you know, outside the West Coast. You know, Southern California's got a very different style. It's very like American Lucha hybrid, and you know, I wanted to see what everything else was about, and you know, heading that way, you know, it's not as Lucha, but I do learn a lot of storytelling, wrestling, ground-based, mat-based wrestling out there. They're a little bit, I don't want to say strong style because that's more Japan, but I want to say like stronger as in, you know, their bumps are a lot harder, heavier, hard-hitting, whereas California style is a lot more Lucha and high-flying. And I don't want to, like, downplay that like, California's, like, not soft style. No, no, no. They're more like, you know, they're going to hit you from above, whereas, you know, the East Coast rather, like, tries to pick you up and slam you down hard kind of style.
Now, as someone that travels quite a bit, and you're on the road a good number of weeks out of any given month, for the young wrestlers just getting started or that are just starting to travel a little bit, what are some of the best travel tips that you could give to someone just starting to travel for pro wrestling?
I would say that you're going to want to travel with a group, you know, people that can help everybody else out as far as, you know, getting lunches, dinners, hotels, et cetera. That would definitely save money in your pockets. I would say try to get the most out of your travel weekends. So sometimes, you know, you got to promote a promotion that you really bust your butt for pays well. And then there are some promotions that you're working for a hot dog and handshake. And, I don't want to discourage young wrestlers that a hot dog and a handshake is not worth your time because I believe in the philosophy that you're investing in your career. So, I mean, a hot dog and a handshake, yeah, it might suck on your in your wallet. You might have spent more doing the travel than you got out of wrestling, but at the same time, if you get enough experience, enough you know, wrestling background in your belt. And, you know, you can increase your resume and everything else. I think that's an investment towards your future. So today I got a hot dog and a handshake, but tomorrow I might be working, or ROH might see me, or, you know, or I might be good enough to actually go to a tryout for, you know, one of the bigger promotions and, you know, have a fair chance. I would also say, you know, try to, again, getting the most out of your weekend. I can't stand, you know, doing a one-off show. Like if I go to Indiana, I don't want to, just do like a Saturday show and then fly back Sunday. You know, I'm trying to fly out like Thursday night and see if I can pick up a Friday, a Saturday, a Sunday, and possibly a Monday if they have Monday shows in the area. That way, you know, four hot dogs and a handshake add up better. You know what I'm saying? Like you don't just have one match, you know, burn however the flight is or a hotel and or a rental car, and you know you lose a lot of money and just for one match experience. I would just say stay home because then you can get one match definitely. Oh, I would hope that you can get one match in your home territory. If you're going to travel, definitely try to get the most out of your travel, which is, you know, a full weekend full of shows.
When you're on the road, obviously the nature of the beast dictates that you aren't going to always be able to maintain the healthiest of diets, trying to maintain some semblance of consistency with a diet is very important for a lot of wrestlers. Do you have any type of tricks that you do in order to try to maintain somewhat of a healthy diet as much traveling as you do?
If you're talking diet on the road, okay, I'm guilty of having a very bad diet for the first few years of my career, unfortunately. I was just, you know, I like to eat. So, you know, I was very, very bad at the diet thing, and you know, I have lapses here and there, but you know, I found that having a healthy diet is actually, it's really improved my wrestling. You know, I didn't have much of a high opinion of my career anyway, ego-wise. Changed my diet around, I had a lot more energy, so now I feel like I can do a lot more, and then I've been holding myself down. As far as diet on the road goes, you know, I try to stick to Subway or, you know, like a sit-down restaurant when I can, because those are the places that can serve chicken and steak. Again, that depends on your budget. So, I mean, if you have to have fast food because it's cheaper, there's a difference between having a burger that will fill you up, that will make you content, you know, versus having three burgers and you feel full afterwards. You want to eat for contention, not being stuffed. You don't want to eat too late either. So, I mean, right after a show, get something to eat. You know, if you can hit the gym in the hotel, do that. If not, try to stay awake for like an hour after you just got done eating trash. But if you have to eat trash, I would definitely say only eat for contention. So if I go to McDonald's, unfortunately, and that's the only place that's open, you know, instead of having a quarter pounder with cheese, you know, just have a regular cheeseburger, like one of those small 39, well, they used to be like 39 cent, like 89 cent cheeseburgers. You know, and a water or something, you know, you don't have to have four cheeseburgers and, you know, a large Coke to be content to, you know, that cheeseburger will hold you over until you can get like healthy food the next morning. So I would definitely say eat for contention, but not, you know, stuff yourself on trash. If you have to have trash, don't stuff yourself.
Last week, like I mentioned earlier, you were here in the Northwest. You had a match at NWA Blue Collar Wrestling with Lance Dean of Measure 11. Lance Dean had a bit of a rough night at the end of the event where he got decimated by a large number of guys. But wrestling Lance Dean last week, what did you think of the way he has progressed in the few short years he's been in professional wrestling?
You know, I wrestled, I don't know when I wrestled Lance the first time. It was, I think a couple years ago. And, you know, we had, you know, it was Team High Def back then. And I don't know what was said prior to that, but, you know, I have heard of the Moonshiners prior. Like, when I first started, the Moonshiners were around even then, but it was a different combination of workers. You know, the Moonshiner stable has always been, like, kind of around. And the tag team was, you know, various different wrestlers. So when I heard I was wrestling the Moonshiners, you know, at first I kind of had like this, you know, I don't know, you know, like, I hope we can pull out a good match maybe. But, you know, Lance Dean and JB at the time, when Team High Def wrestled them, it wasn't that hard of a match. Everything went well. And then, you know, I've wrestled Lance a couple times after that in singles competition. And, every time I've worked Lance, it's, you know, it's gotten easier. It's been a lot better. I think his progression is, really, coming together. I mean, like, you can tell he's training, he's learning from everybody. He asks questions. So, I mean, you know, again, I don't think when my name is next to Lance Dean that I'm going to have a bad night. You know, I think it's going to be a fun night. We're going to have fun. Even if the match, in my opinion, is bad, I think we're both going to learn something from that, which is great. You know, I want to work a guy that's, you know, even if a guy thinks that it's a stinker, he goes, well, what could I have done to get better? And I think Lance Dean does that, you know. You know, you look at other workers I've had bad matches with, they just kind of, you know, whatever. But, you know, I like working Lance, and he's been able to just kind of, you know, I don't think I've had a bad match with Lance, to be honest. I really can't imagine having a bad match. I wish the match last week went a little bit longer. But, I had to take off for the airport, you know, almost immediately after. So I my head wasn't fully in the game that night. But, you know, I watched the match back, and, you know, minus the time frame, I think the match was all right. There was a couple more hiccups on a personal level that I probably would have liked to have improved on my end, but that's just the nature of learning, you know. You know, you just watch back your matches and go, well, I wish I would have done this, and I take note and then practice it and keep going that way.
Now, you also were involved at Northwest Pro last week in their 4th anniversary All Cage show. Is the steel cage a type of match that you enjoy doing, or is it just sort of a necessary evil from time to time for you?
The steel, okay, I mean, as far as my career goes, I mean, like, I'm not going to take away from hardcore wrestlers. You know, I've watched them over my career, and I'm actually, you know, I have great respect for them, you know, so... I always ask myself, well, where are my limits? You know, what can I do on a hardcore level? And, you know, I always imagine the WWE style, you know, like they do ladder matches. I will learn a ladder match. You know, they do table matches. I will learn a table match. So, I think the steel cage is necessary from time to time. Up there in the Northwest Pro, I did an all-steel cage show, which was that was a lot of fun. In fact, that was my first steel cage match, so I was really nervous going into that. I didn't want it to show, you know. But I had a lot in my mind going on the flight up to Portland, and I drive up to Vaughan, Washington for Northwest Pro, and then I drive back down to Portland and fly out of Portland. While I was driving and flying up there, I was definitely thinking a lot of like, man, I hope I don't get hurt. You know, I hope it does more damage to him than it does to me kind of thing. But, you know, ultimately, yes, I want everybody to be safe and the audience to have a good time. But, yeah, I was definitely nervous about the steel cage.
You mentioned the respect you have for hardcore wrestlers, so I'm guessing guys like Necro Butcher, Madman Pondo, Stockade, or guys you don't normally face. But when you do come across guys like that in the locker room, what's the vibe going on between you and them? Is there a little bit of nervousness that you might eventually get in the ring with them, and that's how they prefer to wrestle, or is it an opportunity for you to learn something? How are you looking at it?
When I've gone into locker rooms with these guys, first of all, they're like the nicest guys. They're very respectful, and they have an art to themselves. So I actually watch the guys. I'm a fan of them. You know, like I don't imagine myself ever doing what they do. But, you know, they look like the most vicious guys in that ring. You know, when the bell rings, they are the most vicious guys, and they are probably the nicest guys that I've come across. Do I ever worry about them? Yes and no. They're usually really respectful to the American worker, I don't want to say American, but to the workers that don't want to do it. They actually can do what the wrestling, I guess. I don't know how to classify, you know, guys like myself that, you know, really don't have an interest in wrestling hardcore. I guess we would call ourselves just the WWE worker. Well, let's call it the WWE worker for example. And then you have the ECW worker, which I'm going to be like the hardcore workers. But those guys can work a WWE style, you know, with guys like myself, you know, and they do it really well. They teach me a lot, actually, and when I've worked those guys, because they're really masters of psychology. Working the hardcore style is a whole different art in itself, and if they do it right and they do it well, they can entrance. I mean, like, I'm entranced. I don't even know it until afterwards, and then they remind me, dude, like, you know, we're still wrestlers. And I'm like, oh, yeah, you know what? You fooled me while you were out there. So working those guys, they teach me a lot. Definitely, definitely teach me a lot. Am I nervous working those guys? Yeah, beyond belief, because I don't know what to expect. And then, you know, most of the time when it's done, it's done, you know. But if I don't want to work that style, they won't work that style. You know, like Homeless Jimmy worked AOW, and I watched him. And AOW is more of a family-friendly show. It's not a hardcore show. And he worked a regular match just fine. You know, it was amazing. He busted his butt. He didn't color or nothing. You know what I'm saying? So no blood was anywhere, and it was a great match. So I mean, like, you know, that really opened my eyes a little bit to, like, oh well, so I was wrong. I thought all they did was hardcore. You know, no. These guys can work.
One of the most surreal moments of my career was walking into a locker room and having Madman Pondo jump up and begging me not to get hurt with anything I did. That was for Madman Pondo, so, you know, a little surreal.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah, these guys, like I said, they're so nice.
Now, as someone that has traveled quite a bit, and you've wrestled in a very large number of states so far, with more being added all the time, you have come across, I'm sure, a very wide variety of referees out there. A lot of promotions don't put a lot of stock in the referees, so the quality's not there. Some of them know how vital they can be. They put a lot of effort in securing good ones. You've traveled around quite a bit. You've seen a large number of them. In your opinion, who are some of the referees out there that may not get the credit that they deserve but should be utilized by more promoters?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I'm terrible with names, so you guys have bear with me here for a second, but I don't know, I don't know if, like, Jeff the Ref, for example, down in Southern California for AOW, I don't know if he's working around the country. I know he does do AOW in California. I know he works a couple of promotions in California. I know he works some promotions in Arizona. But this is one of the guys that I actually enjoy having around. His reffing is pretty good. And he has got a good personality also. So he actually does a manager gimmick for AOW on the side. And it's hilarious because, like, I threw this gimmick idea out at one of the workers, and you know, Jeff the Ref started fining one of the workers, like, all the time, like, just randomly, just kept disqualifying him, fining him, and everything else. And I thought that brought a good story element to his character, you know, and to this other worker who was kind of, like, floating around and, like, was just, you know, one. I don't want to say the word jobber, but he was kind of just, like, floating there. Like, nobody, the audience didn't know what he was about until he started getting fined all the time. And then all of a sudden, the audience was like, oh, here's this worker. He's always getting bullied on by this referee, and now the referee is like basically like, I own your career. You owe me so much money that now I'm gonna be your manager. And like, now he comes out with this whole new personality, a whole new gimmick, and it's hilarious. Like, I just love watching these two guys now. So instead of now being like a worker combo, you know, that was just kind of floating there, now he's like one of the, like, my favorite parts of the show is just watching how these two interact and what new ideas these guys are coming up with. So I would definitely put Jeff the Ref out there. As far as other workers, I mean, like, I'm terrible with names. All I know is I know the good from the bad when I'm in the ring. So, yeah, referees definitely deserve a lot of credit because they're the third man in the ring. You know, and you know, if they hesitate with their three counts, or, you know, I mean, they can botch a match that two workers, I mean, they could be five-star workers, and if the referee botches it, you know, then the match starts to go to trash. I mean, in the audience opinion, I've seen it, where the audience just was like, oh, referee, come on now. And then they remember that spot, you know, that the ref blew. So,
At this point, my co-host QT is standing by, and I know he has questions as well. So, Fez, help you as I pass things to QT.
Well, thank you, Sonny Guy. Hello, Mr. Starkey.
Hello.
Now, Mr. Starkey, Sonny Guy mentioned being nervous, or sometimes, occasionally being nervous in new locker rooms and around wrestlers that might be considered hardcore. I think everyone would be kind of nervous around the wrestler known as New Jack. Would you agree?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Well, New Jack, yes. And you also mentioned to Sign Guy that you used to remember McDonald's hamburgers being 38 cents. I remember when you could get a hamburger, fries, and a soft drink for under a dollar. That was a long time ago. Yes.
That's before my time, I think.
Do you also remember when McDonald's French fries were fried in beef tallow? Beef tallow.
Nope. No, I don't remember.
Oh, okay.
That.
Oh, all right. Well, boy, I'm showing my kind of like chronological age there. Yes. Oh, boy. Well, now you can tell other wrestlers in Vaughn, Washington, that French fries were once fried in beef tallow.
Oh, you know what? I don't want to say that I don't remember that. I do want to say I do remember that. It was like one of the controversial segments, like in the, I want to say in the 90s, but I'm not sure.
Wow,
all
right.
Freaked out about it.
Well, I'm sure Pa Moonshine would like to hear that bit of trivia. I know he remembers, you know, back that far. Yes. Well, Mr. Starkey, we usually start out the second part of the show with the standard question, what's the hardest knife-edge chop you have received in the ring? And this is even a more relevant question since Sign Guy did bring up Man Pondo.
Okay, so the knife-edge chop. I'm going to tell a story about this real quick. Being a fan of wrestling as well as being an indie worker, I watched Willie Mack, and he would give the most vicious chops, and I was always afraid of getting in the ring with Willie Mack because of his chops. Now, I went to Brian Kendrick's School of Wrestling, Pro Wrestling, for, you know, training when I can. He's out in L.A. I'm down in San Diego. It's kind of up drive, so it's kind of hard to get over there, but I did go over there, and he was having a class on intensity, and he was like, you need to show your intensity. So he chopped everybody, and I have never had my chest turn purple before, but when he chopped me, like, I took it, and then I looked at my chest, and it was going purple, and I went, well, clearly my chops have stunk up to this point. So, you know, coincidentally, 2 months after that, I was in a match for championship from Hollywood, and I was booked right next to Willie Mack. And then, like, everybody was going around going, hey, is this the first time you're wrestling Willie? I said, yeah. And he goes, all right, I'll give you $10 if you chop Willie. And I said, if I chop Willie, he's going to chop 10 times harder right back. So I know they were setting me up for a rib right then and there. But, you know, and then one of the guys goes, hey, if you don't take this $10, I'm going to go to Willie Mack and I'm going to give him $10 to chop you. And I said, go for it, man, because he'll take your money and he'll give me a chop anyway. And that's what happened in the middle of the match. He chopped me, but it didn't hurt nearly as bad as Brian Kendrick's. So, like, I was, I'm a little happy that Brian got to me first.
Well, how big of a person is Mr. Mack?
Well, Willie Mack?
Yeah.
He's a heavyweight that moves like a cruiserweight. Like, it is amazing what this guy can do. You know, his everything was solid. You know, I felt everything. Like if he was going to hit me with a clothesline, there's no, you know, I'm going to powder puff this. You know, he's going to knock your butt down. So like, yeah, Willie Mack was, I want to say he's a little bit taller than I am and, definitely more stockier than me. But I mean, he's far faster than I am. I mean, like he launched myself around like I was a feather and then pile drove me for the finish. So there was nothing I could do about it, but just take it. You know, I've never been like tossed around like a twig before. You know, so.
Wow. All right. Whew, okay. What's the hardest knife edge chop you've received from a lady wrestler?
You know what? I don't know. I want to say either Ashley Grace or Sage. I don't know if Sage ever chopped me. Oh, you know what? Ashley Grace or Lufisto for sure.
Oh, okay. Wow. Okay. Have you ever heard of a lady wrestler from the Virginia area, Casey Carlisle?
The name sounds familiar. I'm terrible with names, so if I saw a face, I'd probably know exactly who you're talking about. But not sure that me and her ever actually physically met.
Well, you may have seen her. Deep in your memory vault, you may have seen her on Sign Guy's Sign of the Times.
I might have. I'll have to go back and check.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Mr. Stark, a few weeks ago, we had on two wrestlers on the show, Drugs Bunny and Marseille Rocket. That's Marseille and not Maurice. And I gave them the following question. Can you list in order these four injuries from the most feared to the least feared? And they are ankle sprain, cracked rib, concussion, and pulled hamstring. Can you yourself list in order your most feared to least feared?
My most feared is the concussion for sure.
Okay.
I want to say the next one might be the cracked rib on the fear that it might puncture a lung.
Okay.
The sprained ankle I had suffered before, and it sucks, but it's a pain I can deal with. And then the pulled hamstring is also something that sucks, but I think that's the least feared.
Okay, all right. Now, what's the difference between a high ankle sprain and a regular ankle sprain? Can you tell us the difference?
No, not really. You know, I can't answer that question, I think. I don't want to take an educated guess and just be completely off.
Oh, all right. Okay, no problem. I will have to do some research myself because I don't know exactly where a high ankle sprain is. Yeah.
I just say ankle sprain because for me, because funny, another random career story. I was actually in a tag match with Matt Hardy, which is pretty cool. You know, it's one of the fun stories of my life. And they wanted me to jump off the top rope all the way to the floor. I'm afraid of heights. And this was a standard WWE 20x20 ring that I was in. And when I jumped, I freaked in midair, and I didn't land very gracefully. Someone landed on my ankle, and if you look at my ankles today, they're still swollen. You know, my left ankle is still swollen, and there's no pain, but, you know, I clearly did some damage to it.
Wow. Did Matt Hardy at least compensate you after that match by buying you a hot dog?
No, but he did want a ride to his hotel, so I was, I gave him that. He was like, I hope you're okay, recover soon, and, like, it didn't take me that long, you know, because I have dealt with injuries before, and, you know, when it comes to dealing with injuries, pools are fantastic, so... I was in a pool almost the next day, just kind of not putting weight on it, but at least doing little rotations and ankle stretches and everything else, and then started working up from that.
Wow, all right, into a pool. Okay, very good. Now, yeah, I can emphasize with your fear of concussions, because a lot of football players in the NFL, well, college too, get concussions because, well, the players are bigger and faster these days. And there's a trend now among NFL players to sign, if they do make it to their second contract, it's usually after 4 years, they'll play that second contract, maybe a three-year deal, maybe four. Then after 8 years, you'll see a trend now is a lot of NFL players are just calling it quits after two contracts because everyone in the NFL undergoes a concussion within that time. And if they get more than two or three, they're seriously thinking about retiring.
And that's yeah. Smart, I think, you know, because concussions are damages to the brain, right? So you don't want to, I mean, like, I'm sorry, but, you know, you can't really live without your brain. And if your brain's pretty damaged, then you're looking at I would think you're looking at a shorter lifespan. And I'm just talking logically here. You know, I'm not medically clear to say. I mean, I don't know. But my fear here is, you know, if you're damaging your brain and your brain controls all your vital functions, I mean, like, you know, you don't want to lose one of your most, you know, you don't want to lose that, you know what I'm saying? So, I mean, like, I have a family, you know, and I have been fortunate not to have major concussions. I'm sure I've got some minor ones from bad bumps I've taken, but, you know, headaches. But I don't know if I ever got a major concussion, if I would continue after that point, or, you know, how many is my maximum limit. You know, I'm afraid that getting a concussion like that, or like NFL players, you know, I understand that athletes love what they do. I mean, like, well, who in their right mind goes into a ring and, you know, gets knocked down for fun, you know, or like enjoys being beat up like wrestlers do. But, you know, so football players, when they go out there and they're competing, you know, as hard as it looks and as hard as it is, they love what they're doing. And that's why they do it, you know. So, you know, yeah, I would say take care of yourselves, even at wrestling or football or whatever major sport, you know, MMA fighters, you know, they need to boxing. They need to take care of yourself. Take care of number one first, because if you love what you're doing, but you get too many concussions, you're going to regret it later. And I think you should live for today, but also take care of yourself for tomorrow too. So.
Yes, and once they sign that second contract, they're usually talking about millions of dollars, so they're financially set by that point. You know.
Yeah.
So you're starting to see it's starting to be the rare NFL player that plays into his mid-30s. That's doesn't happen much anymore into the mid-30s.
Yeah. And that's one of two things. I mean, you love what you're doing that much, and you're still good at it, you know. Then by all means, I don't think that anybody should be forced to retire if they love what they're doing, and they're still. Like such a slip on the tongue. Who's the Packer quarterback again? Famous Packer quarterback went to the Vikings afterwards. Oh gosh, Ashley's Grace is going to kill me for this one. Like if she's listening. What was his name?
The Viking quarterback.
Yeah, he was the Packers quarterback, John.
Brett Favre.
Who?
Brett Favre.
Yeah, Brett Favre. Oh gosh, I don't even know why. I saw his name and I just couldn't say it. He was doing good for a long time, even in his 30s and everything else, and he was keeping up with all the young guns that were trying to come up and everything else. And I mean, if you can keep up with the young guns and you're still in prime condition, and you love what you're doing, I don't see why you need to quit as long as you're okay. You know, if Brett wanted to quit and he And, you know, he had a legendary career. He doesn't have to keep going. So that's that, you know. But, you know, if he's got too many concussions and he reached the age of 30 and, you know, he had more than enough. He was financially set for life and probably could take care of his kids for even beyond retirement. You know. Good. That's his choice. You know, he can choose to keep going or be set and relax and retire comfortably. And as long as he had no regrets, and he feels that, you know, by the time he reaches the age of 50, he would have no regrets. Then that's fantastic. You know.
Yes, that is. Okay. Well, Mr. Starkey, we had on a couple months ago the Pope. And among commentators, he is working with Jeremy Borash in TNA. Would you be upset to learn that the Pope called Jeremy Borash a jive turkey?
Would I be upset? You know what? I can't just immediately answer. I mean, like, I haven't watched TNA in a minute, so, like, That's kind of, I mean, like, I don't mean to be disrespectful to TNA or anything else. It's just that I haven't had time to actually just watch wrestling for a little bit. So even WWE's kind of, like, slipped my grasp. And I used to be a huge fan of that, but, you know, I'm training all the time. So, you know, I can't answer that question right now. Like,
well, who could call you a jive turkey and get away with it?
You know what? I would probably just let anybody just call me that. Like,
Oh, okay. <laughs> Oh, like, oh gosh!
Like, I wouldn't know how to react. I wouldn't like.
Oh, okay. I could see Paw Moonshine calling you a jive turkey. Yes.
You know what? I could probably see that happening too. I'd be more amused that he said that. Than, like, upset or anything. Like, anything else. I'll probably, like, be flying home with, like, a story like, hey, did you know what Pa Moonshine called me?
All right. Well, Mr. Starkey, I saw your YouTube video entitled NWA Blue Collar Wrestling Tectonic versus Matthias Starkey 312-17. And I was impressed by your purplish chartreuse color combo robe that you entered the ring with. That's purple and chartreuse. It had a large Celtic cross on the front, and your robe matched your shorts in color. My question is, you obviously spent a lot of money on the robe. Were you influenced by the robes of Gorgeous George and the Macho Man Randy Savage and maybe a Goldust?
You know, are you talking like the Ric Flair robe also?
Yes.
Yeah. I love the ring jackets. I think it makes a great presence coming to the ring. It kind of gives a little bit of a vibe when you're coming to the ring that some people can identify with. I mean, like, wrestlers that come out just in their trunks or a t-shirt or something. I mean, I think it kind of sells generic, and I know a lot of great workers that do that. But it doesn't really stand you different from, like, you know, if like 1,000 workers are all coming out to the ring with a t-shirt and their trunks or just their trunks, or tights or whatever. And only, say 50 of them are wearing robes or some sort of in-ring jacket, that those guys are going to, stand out more, I think, you know, out of like 950 generic workers and 50 that actually look a little more lavish, stand out-ish. They kind of, get a little bit of an extra push in the audience head, I think. Be it, you know, good guy, bad guy, whatever you want to say, the audience will remember, oh, you're that guy that came out with that robe, or you're that guy that came out with those sparkles, or you're that guy that came out with that, you know, the feathers or something like that. So I think, yeah, when I was watching those guys, that, yeah, they stood out. Like, Ric Flair's robe always stood out to me, you know, and you saw, like, this, like, and when, especially when he's a bad guy, you saw this, like, ego, look at my beautiful robe that you guys could never afford, kind of thing. The design I currently come out with was stolen from a lucha show, and I saw somebody's in-ring jacket, and I said, I really like the way this looks. I really like the, I mean, it's a little more different than a traditional robe. That's why I got the splits on my legs. So that, you know, it's not just, you know, like a Rick Rude type robe that goes all the way around and covers you up, and then you show off your glorious body afterwards, because my body's not that glorious. But just the style, I love the style. So I asked the person that I go for ring gear for if she could do it, and she said, yeah, I'm like, there it is. You know, the rest is history.
Wow, okay, all right. Now, the announcer said that you were from San Diego, California. Is that near Oxnard?
Yeah, it's about 3.5 hours from Oxnard. Four for traffic.
Oh, okay. Well, the announcer said you were 183 pounds, which would put you in the cruiserweight division. Why did you accept the challenge with Tectonic, who is a true heavyweight, plus 15%?
The thing about cruiserweights, especially in California wrestling style, is very, very fast-paced wrestling. Very, like I said, a lucha American hybrid is what I would classify California. So the thing about cruiserweights, and you're looking at like WWE's 205, I'm thinking like those guys can work the heavier weights over on like Raw or SmackDown, and put on some good matches. Do I think it's a matter of, take a look at like Rey Mysterio, you know, who's a great worker, a legend, and he's able to compete with guys like Undertaker and Randy Orton and all those guys. So I think being in a cruiserweight and being classified as a cruiserweight is kind of like not a downplay, but at the same time, they have a lot more to offer wrestling as a whole than just being classified as a cruiserweight. So yeah, I'm a small guy by comparison to most. BCW is having Tim Storm versus Bad Blood, and you know, I'm small compared to both gentlemen, by all means. But can I prove to you that I can compete with Bad Blood, or I can compete with a guy like Tim Storm, and have you captivated? Now, that's the challenge, and that's what I love about wrestling. From a personal perspective, is, you know, you put a guy like Tectonic in front of me, and I'm going to have to work harder, I already know, because I'm a cruiserweight, but at the same time, can I offer you a believable match where, like, he's not just murdering me, but I actually can compete and can hang with a guy like Tectonic? And I think I did that, you know.
Yes, you did. You did compete with him. However, Tectonic is known for double lacing both arms like a full Nelson, while also controlling the neck when both competitors are down on the mat. And then he does a move like a gator roll, like he did during your match at the 442 to 452 mark. He rolled you twice and then got the two count out of it before you kicked out. My question is, how vice-like is that gator roll from a 280-pounder?
Oh, you know, and that's it. That's the advantage to disadvantage. Like, my advantage is speed, and the disadvantage is my lack of power to a guy like that. So when he locks that in, Like, you there's, you know, it's a gator roll for a reason. He's going to force me to roll. And, you know, when he, eventually he has to unlock for the pinfall, and, my, you know, you got to hope that, you know, he doesn't do too much damage in the gator roll. But, yeah, it's like you're trying to escape, and he doesn't want you to escape. He wants you to roll this way, and he's going to force the roll out of you. So, you know, you have to just go with it. You know? Otherwise, that could cause some damage.
Yes. Yeah, I could imagine. Yes. All right, well, you had a very good inside cradle at the 505 mark. That produced a 2.5-second near fall on Mr. Tonic. My question is, with a move like that, did you wrestle in high school?
You know what? Honestly, no, I didn't. It's one of the high school athletic regrets I've had. I played a lot of sports. It's just wrestling wasn't one of them. And so when I started training eight, nine years ago, that was one of the big questions was, well, how old am I now? It's about 7 years ago. I'm giving myself too much credit. Yeah, when I started training 7 years ago, the one big question I had was, is amateur wrestling like a requirement? And, you know, it would have helped for sure, but I'm learning as I'm going, and that cradle roll-up that you're referring to, it took a couple years of practice and just remembering that it's part of my – that is something that I do know how to do now, you know, effectively.
Wow, okay. All right. At the 7:31 mark of the match, superfan Bob Hardy can be heard saying, "Rah, rah, re, kick him in the knee. Rah, rah, ras, kick him in the other knee." My question is, if Tyson did not have you in a modified axe handle, chin lock, with your right knee in your middle back, would you have bailed out of the ring, told Bob Hardy that this 1948 football chair was not appreciated, and then taken his hot dog that he usually orders from the concession stand?
You could offer me a handshake afterwards and then my night set. Got my hot dog and my handshake. I probably would have made me laugh, to be honest. And that match that you're referring to, I'd imagine that I was a bad guy at that moment. But that was a few months ago, and my ways have changed a little bit. So I mean, hearing that kind of chant, that probably would have made me laugh, to be honest. My dad says that all the time, so like to hear it again in the middle of a match probably would have just made me crack up.
Well, then I recommend you go back and put that video on the 7:31 mark, and you can listen to Bob Hardy say that.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go back and listen. to that for sure.
Yes. Okay. Well, at the 9:01 part of the match, you had both your legs wrapped around Tectonic's right arm, and you had his elbow bent in an unnatural way in an MMA submission hold. The referee asked Tech if he was going to submit, and to his credit, he did not. My question is, were you a student in an MMA dojo, and were you surprised that Tectonic did not submit?
I'm going to answer the second one first. And, you know, again, advantage to disadvantage. And he was bigger than me, stronger than me. So I thought it was a long shot that he would submit. But at the same time, I'm sure I did a little damage on my way to his battling to the ropes or however he escaped. I don't remember. That was a minute ago. To answer the first question, to improve my wrestling game, I've actually gone to UFC gym down in Corona, California. It's about an hour drive from where I'm currently living. And I took up two disciplines, because boxing is definitely not a martial art, but it is a combat discipline. And my boxing has improved greatly in technique and cardio, which I thought was essential. I was getting blown in 10 minutes and going from tag team wrestling to singles work wrestling. I knew I needed to step my cardio game up, so I went to boxing for that. It's been a fantastic transition. Now, as far as the jiu-jitsu holds go, yeah, that was the other discipline that I took up for myself, which is, I've started training with a coach about a year ago in jiu-jitsu, and I have developed a lot more holds and counter holds than what I used to know. I used to know your basic top wrist lock, arm bar, cross arm breaker, cross face, full Nelson, a lot of wrestling holds, but I didn't know how to counter hold a lot of those into another hold. And jiu-jitsu is really helping my mat-based game get better. So I would say I'm still very, very, very new. I mean, if I went into a jiu-jitsu match with anybody, I'm sure I would get tapped out in a few seconds. but I am learning.
Well, and have you had many amateur boxing matches?
No, my classes are usually just cardio-based classes. I have been hit a couple times, but because we're not trying to go for knockouts or actual one-on-one contests, we're very it's very fast-paced, but, he calls out combinations that I'm supposed to hit almost instantaneously as he's saying them. And then he'll do duck roll movements as well as kicks for MMA cycles. So I'm just listening to what he's calling out. I execute as fast as I can, but sometimes, he'll tell me to block or duck a particular movement, and I didn't hear it in time, and sometimes he's clocked me in the face. Not hard enough to give me a concussion, fortunately, but hard enough that I go, well, that hurt,
Wow, well, after the show is over, you'll have to do a YouTube search or a Google search on a fighter that fought in the 1930s, a lightweight, and his name was Benny Leonard.
Okay.
Benny Leonard. Okay.
Okay. I'll write that in.
All right. Well, at the 10-minute and 35-second mark of the match, with your match with Tectonic, you whipped Tectonic into the corner of the ring that is closest to the left-hand side dressing room, and then missed with a stinger splash at precisely the 10-minute and 40-second mark of the match. As you were staggering back from the turnbuckle impact of your missed stinger splash, 1 second later, Tectonic was in the process of using the ropes to slingshot him off at the 10:42 mark, or 2 seconds after you missed with the splash, and then he hit you with a diving clothesline. By a diving clothesline, I mean, if you freeze the video at the 10:42 mark, you can see that Tectonic still has both feet on the ground, but then the balls of his feet are, the balls of his feet are off, but not the heels. I mean, the balls of his feet near the toes are still on the mat and not the heels. And he is about at a 45-degree angle, and you are up in the air and coming down toward the mat like a Fallsbury flopper high jumper falling toward a foam landing high jump pit. Tectonic then proceeds to hook your left leg with both arms, mind you, not one, and he got the 3 count. The referee then gave Tectonic the belt. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. I hope you go back and look at that, how he was at a 45-degree angle, but both feet were still on the mat while he was giving you a clothesline.
So yeah, so he if I'm imagining this correctly, then he threw his whole body weight to me. Tectonic's a little bit taller than me, and then really that clothesline is vicious. I remember it well now that you've reminded me of that particular night. But yeah. Yep, he knows that that's one of his go-to moves, and I missed my splash and unfortunately turned right into his clothesline from hell.
yes. It was slightly stunning in its beauty.
Well, I mean, again, from your perspective, I'm glad you appreciated that. But from a taking it perspective, stunning would be the word, I guess.
Yes. Well, Mr. Starkey, I was stunned to learn that the show Seinfeld had 180 episodes. Out of that 180 episodes, David Putty, Elaine's boyfriend, was only in 9 episodes, but his impact was huge. My question is, in your opinion, do you have a Patrick Warburton or David Putty-like impact on blue-collar wrestling?
I mean, if you're going to go... okay. As far as the fans go, probably not. You know, I don't know if even half of them remember me. I know some of them will, like, see me come in and, oh, this guy. But, I mean, like... If I wanted to be funny, I guess I could probably just sit down in the locker room and stare at a wall. And hey, where are we going after this? You know, I'm going. What's for dinner after blue collar? You know, Arby's. I'll have Arby's.
Patrick Warburton, our putty, was known to go to Arby's. Yes. All right. Well, would you agree that Pa Moonshine bears a striking resemblance to Babu Bhatt, the Pakistani restaurant owner on Seinfeld?
Oh, yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to think of that. Are we talking angry Babu with like, or are we talking about the Babu where I come in and try to offer Pa Moonshine some bad advice?
angry Babu Bhatt, where he's shaking his index finger at Jerry Seinfeld and saying, "You are a bad man." That one.
I gotta do that because last week again I was at Northwest for the Steel Cage show, and I had JB Moonshine in a headlock right in front of Pa Moonshine. Oh, man, that would have been priceless if Pa Moonshine just started shaking his finger at me while I'm choking JB on.
That would have been great, yes. You are a bad man.
Yeah.
All right, well, it's been very nice talking with you. And at this time, I'm going to turn it back over to Sign Guy.
All righty.
Thank you, QT. Well, we have just a few moments left, so I want to give that time to you. If there's anything you'd like to say to the listeners, feel free to plug and promote anything you got, social medias, merchandise, upcoming appearances, your favorite car dealership, anything in the world, floor is all yours.
All right, well, thank you for having me. This is Matthias Starkey. You can add me on Facebook, Matthias, M-A-T-H-I-A-S, Starkey is S-T-A-R-K-E-Y. Page is relatively new, so go ahead and just hit the like page. You can follow my calendar on there. It shows all my appearances all over the country. I hope to go international soon. You can follow AOW Facebook. That's the promotion that I help run. That is www.facebook.com/AOW Capitals and wrestling in lowercase. For all our events, you can see some of the great SoCal wrestlers down there. We've just had Brian Cage and Joey Ryan's coming in and out. Willie Mack just came in, so, I mean, those are all great workers. On top of, like, Scorpio Sky, Ryan Taylor, and all the other great Southern California wrestlers. I am trying to start up a Twitch page. Hopefully you can see me live playing video games on Twitch. Hopefully starting tonight, I would hope. If not, sometime this week for sure. You can follow me on Twitch. My screen name is Alpha Omega Matt on Twitch. So please add me there and come hang out in the chat rooms with me. And love to just chat video games, wrestling, whatever you guys want to chat about. Well, let's just have a good time on Twitch. And, yeah, as far as upcoming promotions, you can see me. I might be making my BVW debut in Las Vegas August 6th and taking most of August off to spend time with some family, be up in Northwest Pro and Portland tours in August. For BCW, August 19 and 20, you can see me on those 2 days. And for further bookings and updates, please add to the Matthias Starkey page on Facebook and then hit the Use App button. I usually update my calendar of wrestling promotions and city locations, dates on when I'm going to be there. Other than that, yeah, if you guys had a good time with me, I had a good time with you guys. And, yeah, follow me on Twitch for more live chit-chats. And, yeah, let's just have a good time, hang out, and thank you for tuning into my segment on this show.
Well, Mr. Starkey, it has been a pleasure having you back. Been way too long. I'm sure our paths will cross in the not-too-distant future once again, and we look forward to seeing you whenever you're up here in the Northwest. Fans, he's all over the map, so if you see he's coming to a town near you, buy a ticket, support what he does. Very, very good in the ring. We will be back with you. We'll be back with you next week.
Oh.
What's up? Sometimes it's chaotic here at the end. Sometimes it's chaotic. But we'll be back with you next week. Next Friday, we got the War Pig coming to the program. And then next Sunday, Jenkins is going to be joining us. Should be a good time. Make sure you join us then.
Yes. Did you want to sit outside or stay?